live to live righteously. It's time for another episode of The Cultural Hall, recorded from Salt Lake on my end and Texas, I believe, on Dusty's end. Is that true, Dusty?
Well, no. Actually, I'm in Salt Lake now.
Are you really?
I still practice law in Texas. So, yeah, go figure that one out.
Yeah, I need to figure that one out. It's Dusty Smith. He responded to our Twitter crowdsourcing to be able to do some episodes here at the Cultural Hall. It's good for us every once in a while to reach out on our various social media platforms. By the way, you can find us at the Cultural Hall on all of them, and just see who's out there and get to know you folks a little bit. Dusty responded and said, well, yeah, we should chat because I've done 69 Firesides. You were talked about in General Conference. You have a book, and you were on the cover of LDS Living. We'll get into all that first. I want to know, how did you get to know about the Cultural Hall?
I'm on Twitter.
Okay.
You know, I don't tweet like everybody else does, but I'm on Twitter, and somebody had posted or retweeted something that one of your tweets, and I was and I liked what I saw.
Okay.
So I went to y'all and I saw what y'all did and who you were, and I thought, these are people I want to follow.
I love that. So then you didn't know we actually did a show available in podcast form, is what I'm hearing.
You're hearing that absolutely correctly.
Okay.
But now I do.
Yeah, and now you have over 300 episodes to go back and listen to some of the greats and some folks that you'll be like, I had no idea who this person is, and then I listened. And quite frankly, if we're being honest with one another, Dusty, a few episodes that you'll be like, well, that one wasn't as good as the other ones.
I can't imagine that happening.
Thank you. I appreciate that. Dusty, you were originally from Texas, or at least that's where you bought your cell phone. So let's start there. Give me a short synopsis of your life story. What's that about?
Well, I was raised by my mom and my grandparents. And my mom was Lutheran. My grandfather was Catholic. And my grandmother was Baptist.
Okay.
And
they all walk into
churches.
A bar. And then, right? That's what that sounds like, a setup for a really great joke.
But the Baptist wouldn't drink. So anyway, the Lutheran and Catholic would. I was raised, going into all different churches. And I even remembered as a kid thinking, why are there all these differences when it's all out of the same book? Mm-hmm. In college, right after college, I mean, there's a lot to the story. I'm kind of shortening it down. But after college...
You can go a little bit longer if you feel like you need to. I want it just long enough to cover everything and then not a second or sentence more.
Well, the I went to college, University of Texas in Austin. And okay.
So Hook'em Horns, right?
Hook'em Horns. Go Horns, beat the Sooners. I had an experience when I was in my third year of college that I turned my back on God completely. A young friend had been needlessly killed, and I just really was angry at God. And in 1983, the year after I graduated from college, I was visiting my mother at home, and I tell people, actually I went home to wash clothes for free. And my mother had been up to Salt Lake on business. She was with the Veterans Administration, and somebody given her Book of Mormon. And as I was going through the, she had put it on my old bookshelf in my old bedroom, and I was going looking for a Louis L'Amour Western to read while I washed clothes. And the Book of Mormon fell off, and I read it, or opened it up, began to read it. Was intrigued. Went to the phone book. Didn't know who to call because, you know, I could tell people, y'all are weird. Well, you don't have church. You have ward and you have stake. And I had no idea who to call, but it was lunchtime and I was hungry, so I called the stake.
Sure.
And
now, is that real? Is that real, or just for the purposes of the joke?
That is absolutely real. I didn't know who to call, and I just kind of, because I was hungry, I said, well, let me just call the stake. That just seemed like that would be in charge because, you know, I love stake. Mm-hmm. And, a guy answered the phone, and it turned out he was the stake president. He's never there during the week, he said, but he had forgotten something on Sunday, came by to pick it up, and was there just for my phone call. Hmm. We agreed that I would meet the missionaries at University Ward in Austin, Texas. I did, and within a short time, I was baptized. And immediately people started saying, you should go on a mission. You should, you know, and I would say, I'm not going on a mission. I'm 24. I have a college degree. I have a job. Not going to happen. Mm-hmm. And anyway, so while I was at the MTC, I felt like I was babysitting.
Yeah. That's got to, you sort of leapt there, and I appreciate that also for jokes, for joke purposes. But I mean, people will often do that, right? We'll have this claim where it's like, hey, you know, you're still of the age where you can serve. And in your particular instance, you know, having a degree, having a job, it would seem far less likely that you would do it. What was it that made you decide to go serve a mission?
Well, I was absolutely against it. And I was sitting in sacrament meeting one day at the university ward, which was a singles ward essentially. And I just had this incredible impression, you need to serve your mission. So I sold everything I could sell, quit my job, and went on a mission.
Okay.
And I was very disenchanted at the MTC. I was 24. I'd lived away from home. I was with all these 19-year-olds. I was unimpressed with how they acted away from home. Mm-hmm. And my family was not a member, you know, they weren't members of the church, and they thought I was kind of crazy for quitting a job and going and serving a mission where I wasn't going to get paid.
Yeah.
So I thought, well, if nobody cares if I'm serving a mission, I'm going home.
Yeah.
So I called church headquarters and I told the poor lady that answered the phone. She said, can I help you? I said, look, if nobody cares if I'm here, I'm going home. And she said, will you hold on a second, please? And I wait, and a voice comes on the phone and says, Elder, if nobody else cares if you serve a mission, I do. This is L. Tom Perry.
Oh my gosh.
And so he and I chatted, and then he asked me if he could be my pen pal on my mission. So, he and I were pen pals. And in fact, when I got off my mission, he asked me to come up to Salt Lake and give a mission report. So I did. I got to meet with him in his office.
So let me ask you something about that real quick. At that time, he was one of the apostles, I presume.
Yes.
And you have any idea how that circumstance worked out, that he was the one that was able to answer the phone and then, or get the phone handed off to be able to talk to him?
None.
Okay.
None. But like I said, he and I were pen pals on my mission. He wrote me, I wrote him, and came off my mission. I went to law school in my third year.
Hang on. Well, let's catch up some pieces here. What kind of things did he write you? Was it long prose, or was it like, hey, here's some excerpts from my upcoming general conference talk? What do you think? Like what is that? Like what and how often?
He asked me who he should bet on for the next football game. I'm absolutely kidding.
Do you have a lead on the upcoming horse race? Here, listen.
No, you know what? Mainly they were not long letters. They were short things. You know, he would ask me how I'm doing. Am I teaching anybody? How I feel about it? Because he knew that I was older than the rest of the missionaries. Yeah. And I have very, you know, I didn't have the support that most LDS Latter-day Saint missionaries have.
Yeah.
You know, from home. And so he was kind of filling in a void that I think in his mind, he was amazing. And I would write him back and I'd tell him, we taught this many people and we baptized this many people. And you know, they were just short, probably just a paragraph or two each letter, but he was very good about it.
And asked you to come and report. Remind me where you served again.
Honduras.
How was that? And you said in the 80s, right? Mid to early 80s. What was that experience like?
84 to 86. It was interesting. Well, it was number one. It was the second poorest country in this hemisphere at that time. It was very poor. It was a huge culture shock. My first area, we had to put a sock over the shower, which didn't have hot water, by the way, but I put a sock over the shower head to filter the dirt out of the water.
Oh.
Yeah. It was austere and it was very very much impoverished. Huge culture shock, but I got to tell you, I loved it. And I loved serving. I loved my mission.
Do you have an experience you could share, either one of hilarity or spirituality or just some some go-to story that you have from your mission?
My favorite story from my, well, I gosh, there's a whole bunch, but my, I think one of my favorites is I had a dream like the week before my mission that I was going to baptize somebody in a river. And okay. I get to my mission, and we're in that first meeting with the mission president, the new missionaries, and we have dinner, and he talks to us, and then he talks to us individually. And I said, "This is so cool, President. I had a dream about baptizing somebody in the river." And he said, "Well, that's not going to happen in this country. Every one of our chapels has a baptismal font."
Yeah, so sorry.
Yeah, so your dream's not going to happen.
Yeah.
And I said, "Okay, well, darn. All right." So in my third area, time for a baptism, the city water goes out. And our baptism people were showing up, and there was a river behind the chapel. And we went down and I baptized somebody in the river.
Wow. For you, was that just a fulfilling of that
absolutely.
That prophecy, that dream that you had?
Absolutely, absolutely. And what made it cool was the fact that I was told that dream would not be fulfilled, but mm-hmm. it was. And that I have a picture of it, in fact, of me baptizing that young man in the river. It was just an amazing experience.
The church itself in Honduras, pretty large, small.
Yeah. We'll go with that.
Yeah. It's large and small.
Well, you know, size is relative.
Okay.
We baptize on my mission almost every weekend.
Oh, wow. And
when I left, we had to build chapels where we were using people's homes. And so, you know, but then right after I left, they announced a temple in Tegucigalpa. And they built that temple in Tegucigalpa. And then they just announced in this last general conference, a temple in San Pedro Sula, Honduras. So we're going to have two temples in Honduras.
That's incredible.
Yeah.
Have you kept in touch with anyone that you taught?
No. And, because I left the church.
Oh, okay.
But no, I have not. So I get back from my mission. I go to law school. In my third year of law school, I go to Palmyra, and I tell people I went to law school in a foreign country, Michigan. It was the only law school I could find that would let me work a full-time job and go to law school full-time.
Uh-huh.
And so in my third year, I went to Palmyra, to the pageant, and encountered a bunch of antis, and I debated with them, and I came back from that experience wanting to be smarter, to be better at debating these antis. And I began to read things and study things. And the more I studied and read of old doctrine books, doctrine and history, not anything anti. Uh-huh. I was not an anti, but I began to question my testimony because I began to discover things I'd never heard before.
Sure. I don't want to say necessarily age old, but, that idea that, you know, we hear things that we're like, wait a minute, I've been a member of this church, in my case, my entire life, in your case, a convert. And it's like, why did people not tell me some of these things, these real parts of the history?
Well, and the thing is that back in 80, this was in 89, the church wasn't really as open as they are now. And uh-huh. And so when you ask questions, the answer I got most of the time was, don't ask questions, have faith.
Right.
Well, that didn't work for me. Right. And I mean, I was in law school. I want answers. And so I ended up losing my testimony, and I wrote a letter to the state president, and I asked to remove my name from the church records. And a few weeks later, I got a letter that I've been excommunicated.
Tell me what year is this?
89.
Okay. And so a pretty quick process then. It doesn't sound like you had to do the actual church discipline process or anything.
Oh, no,
like
no, 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 no. They invited me. No, no.
They invited
me through the church court, and I wrote them back and I said, you have no authority over me. I've already left the church.
Yeah. Okay.
So I'm not coming to a court. So apparently they had the court anyway. I don't know. I wasn't there, but I got a letter saying I was excommunicated.
Yeah. I think as a matter of principle, they still will hold the court. Even if you say, listen, I'm not coming, they'll still hold it in the off chance that you do decide, or that someone else decides to kind of come and speak on your behalf, just as a technicality, so that they do that within anything of excommunication. But then you get a letter, and you're like, good, I'm out.
No, I got a letter and I was angry. you know, you could have just taken my name. There's such a, the word excommunication has such a negative connotation. I thought to myself, you know, they could have done it easily and just take my name off the records. But no, they had to have a court and find that I had done something wrong. That made me angry.
Okay.
And I became an anti-Mormon.
And when you say anti-Mormon, you mean someone who just didn't like the church, or you were out prolifically, you know, telling people about those things,
yes,
etc.
Yes. Yes. Okay. In fact, you asked me if I kept in contact with people on my mission in the Army. I also, after law school, I went into the Army, and I actually was stationed for a year in Honduras in the Army. And I actually went and tried to find people that I had baptized and apologized to them.
Teaching them the gospel. Interesting. Interesting.
Yeah,
I want to
very, take, very, very, very anti.
I want to take a quick break, and I want to pick this story right back up. Let's do that in the second block of the Cultural Hall. I want to take a quick second and talk to you about Best DJ in Utah now in its second year. Last year, I went to Washington, to Roche Harbor, and did a gorgeous wedding. This year, I'm slated to go to Moab, to go to Denver to do weddings. And guys, it couldn't be going any better. Thanks in large part to folks like yourself, people who are listening to this and say, you know what, I need a wedding or a mobile DJ for something, and then reach out to me. You can go to bestdjinutah.com. You can find me on all of the social medias at Richie T. Stedman, or you can certainly just send me an email, Richie, R-I-C-H-I-E-T as in tough guy, Stedman, S-T-E-A-D-M-A-N @gmail.com. I would love to see what I could do to make your event that much better. Whether it's a party or the biggest day of your life, you need the best DJ in Utah. And like I said, it doesn't have to be in Utah. It can just be the best DJ in Utah. I don't know. Now we start to get into like the technical things. It's bestdjinutah.com.
Hey, this is Jake the Computer Boy. Whoops, I meant Computer Guy from PC Laptops in Salt Lake City. You haven't heard me on the radio doing commercials in a long time because I've been learning all the ins and outs of PC Laptops, the company my dad, Dan the Laptop Man, started 21 years ago. I've been working at our corporate headquarters designing and building new computers for you. I design and hand build the new PC Laptops S1 desktop, and it's just $799 with a lifetime warranty. Each one is built to perfection, blazing fast and beautiful, and backed forever with a rock-solid lifetime warranty. And it's only $7.99.
Thanks, Jake. I love you, son. Dan the Laptop Man here. To make it impossible to resist, we're doing 12-month special financing on any PC Laptops desktop or laptop computer. Have I lost my mind? Call us at 1-877-596-7283 for details, or check us out at PCLaptops.com. That's PCLaptops.com, where we love you!
So you're in the military, and you tried to find these people whom you taught. Were you successful in finding anyone that you taught?
Yes.
And you said, listen, I'm sorry, I taught you things that now I don't believe in. I'm now no longer a member of the church. And how was that received?
I don't know. And I say it that way because the people of Honduras are incredibly gracious and humble. Okay. They received me very well. Did they listen to anything I had to say? I don't know. I don't know if I affected anybody.
Sure. But they were open to you. They were probably glad to see, you know, this person who had been a part of their life and certainly a part of their conversion. And so they were gracious.
They called me Elder Texas. Yeah.
Okay.
So I also come back from, I got stationed at Fort Sill, Oklahoma, and I began to discover the internet, where I could be an anti-Mormon in from my own home. I could argue with people and, you know, without going to churches and stuff anymore. I could just do it from the internet. And I went to different chat boards. And in 99, I joined a chat board called What Do Mormons Really Believe? Mm-hmm. And I began to argue with a guy named Mike. And we argued just horrible, horrible, horrible arguments. And he didn't care for me, and I did not care for him. But over time, we became friends.
Okay.
And he began putting my name in the temple every week. And I would tell him, don't do that.
Yeah.
Don't do that. Don't do that. But he's did
like,
every week.
And he's like, too bad doing it.
Yeah, pretty much.
Yeah. Yeah.
You're not the boss of me.
Yeah. No, listen, I'll put whoever name I want in the temple.
Yeah. That's kind of what he said.
Yeah.
In 2009, I went down to the border of Texas to do a deposition and came back with a swine flu. The swine flu at that point had no cure. Mm-hmm. People were dying all over the world. hundreds of thousands of people died from the swine flu. And no doctor would see me. I'm considered a disabled veteran. I've had six knee surgeries, and I called the VA, and they didn't want me to come in at all. Mm-hmm. And so I was laying in what I considered my deathbed, and I didn't know. I was so sick. And two missionaries knocked on my door. My eldest boy opened the door and let him in. I've never forgiven him for that. Worse, he brings them up to my deathbed. One of them actually looks at me and says, "You're sick." Like the spiritually strong in this guy.
Yeah.
I said, "Get out of my house." And they said, "Can we give you a blessing?" And I said, "We'll get you out of my house." And they said, "Yeah." So they gave me a blessing.
Uh-huh.
And I was immediately healed.
Now, when you say that, and people that are listening to this, they're going to go, "Okay, really?" So,
yeah.
So talk about it. You say immediately healed. Go for it. Talk about it.
With the swine flu, I had high fever, sweating, could not get out of bed. My body was so weak and racked with pain that I could not get out of bed. They gave me the blessing, and immediately the fever broke, the sweating stopped, and I stood up out of bed.
Okay.
And I walked them downstairs to the front door and said, "Don't ever come back."
They said, "Hey, thanks for being grateful."
Yeah. in 2014, I joined a different board, and this is where the miracles start. In 2014, I joined another board. I joined under the name Country Boy.
All right, hang on. Before we get to 2014 and Country Boy, and I'll put a little page marker there. So 2009 is when you had the swine flu. You had to have recognized that you were immediately healed.
Yes.
That you were able to walk them out, yet you still
yes.
said, "Hey, don't come back." And then there's this absence of 5 years where did you wrestle with the fact that God had healed through a priesthood blessing? Or was it just like, "Meh, forget it. I don't want to."
My feeling, I was very, very happily Catholic. Okay.
Okay.
And my feeling was the Lord healed me. He didn't, you know, he knows I'm Catholic. Okay. He healed me.
Yeah, he used whatever means he could. And in this case, it happened to be LDS missionaries, but you felt like you did attribute it to God healing you, but didn't feel any sort of particular devotion then to the Church of Jesus Christ.
No, I'll be honest. I did feel a pull, and I to come back, and I ignored it because okay. I didn't want to come back. And I kept thinking that the pull was not the pull of the Spirit. It was just having good memories of my mission and my time in the church. Cause I had good memories of that.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, you know, things go on. In 2014, I joined a different board, and this, and I'm very obviously not a member of the church. And this girl messages me, her name is Garden Girl. And she says, "I feel very drawn to you. Do you mind if we correspond?" And I wrote her back and I said, "That'd be fine. However, I must tell you, I am married." And she wrote back and she said, "I'm 75. Get over yourself."
I love it. I love it.
So we began to chat. I never knew her name.
Uh-huh.
But
it was Garden Girl. She told you.
It was Garden Girl. And one day she said, "Can we talk on the phone?" I said, "Sure." So she asked me, "Do you have any family in the church?" And I said, "I don't." And I said, "Well, you know, I might." Back when I was a member of the church in the 80s, I heard of a guy that I'm related to. I don't know him, never met him, never talked to him. But his name is Dean Jesse. And he was a big mucky muck in the church. Now, Dean Jesse, if you don't know who he is the guy responsible for the Joseph Smith papers.
Oh, okay. All right.
He's the church historian emeritus.
Okay.
And there was a long pause. And she said, "Dean Jesse is your cousin?" I said, "Yep." And she said, "Dean Jesse's my cousin."
Hmm.
So this girl who was strangely drawn to me was a member of the family I never knew existed. So also in 2014, my wife was given an opportunity for a promotion with her company, but it would require, we were in Dallas, it would require her moving to Baton Rouge, Louisiana. And like I say in the Firesides, I don't know about y'all, but the words promotion and Baton Rouge, Louisiana never belong in the same sentence.
Hey, I've been to Baton Rouge. It's okay. All right. No, you're right.
Yeah.
No, you're 100%
yeah.
right.
So anyway, she said, "Should I take this?" And I said, "Sure." And we had a plan. I would stay in Dallas. I had a good job making good money, had a house. I would stay in Dallas. She would go to Baton Rouge and work until the same position opened up in Texas and she could make a lateral transfer.
Okay.
With the promotion. So she takes this, her district that she was, it was 40 some odd districts in the company, and hers was at the bottom of the stack. And in just a few months, she built up number four in the company.
Wow.
And the reward for that was in January of 15, they called her and said, we're going to close your district and we're going to have to let you go.
Oh.
Then the very next day.
So wait a minute. You say reward sarcastically.
Yeah. Nothing gets past you. I'm telling you.
Very observant on this end. Thank you.
So anyway, the next day, the vice president of the company called her and said, don't sign anything. There's a position open in Baltimore. We want you to take that position. So don't move back to Texas. It's a 2-week vetting process. Stay in Baton Rouge until we make the vetting, do the vetting. And if you get the position, we'll move you to Baltimore from Baton Rouge. And she said, should I take that? And I said, yes, I won't visit you every month like I was in when you were in Louisiana, but we have that plan. You'll have that position until they open up the same position in Texas. So then I called my friend Mike, and who was, you know, the one who lives here in Utah that was my enemy for so long. And I told Mike, I said, listen, pray that Susan gets this position in Baltimore.
Yeah, put her name in the temple, will you, pal?
Yeah.
So long as you're doing things.
Yeah, you may as well, since you're going to be there anyway, put my name in. But see, then I got clever, and I just should have shut up, but I got clever, and I said, however, Mike, if God really wants me to be a member of the church again, he will send Susan to Utah. Now, there was no openings in Utah, so I felt very comfortable with that joke.
Well, sure, of
course.
But
the very next day, the person in Utah retired. The very next day, Susan's paperwork was transferred from Baltimore to Utah, and she was hired immediately with no vetting.
Yeah.
I called Mike.
Take that.
Yeah. I called Mike and I said, you're not going to believe this. She's moving to Salt Lake. And he said, well, you know what you told God? And I said, I was just kidding. And he said, God wasn't.
Yeah.
So I said, fine. I hit my knees. I said, Heavenly Father, if this is what you want, fine. But for 26 years, I've had issues. I've heard all the apologetics. I've heard all the answers. They don't make any sense to me. I need answers or I can't do this. And over the next several weeks, I would wake up in the middle of the night with a new answer to a new issue or to an old issue, a new that I'd never heard before. And until I woke up one day in March of 15 and I had my testimony back.
Wow.
In April of 15, I came to visit Susan in Salt Lake. It was Easter weekend. My firm had Good Friday off and it was our anniversary. Susan and I were married on April Fool's Day.
Okay.
We thought that was appropriate.
Yes.
And so
for you or her, that's the question.
Yeah.
For you.
Well, no. We married for better or for worse. I couldn't do any better and she couldn't do any worse. So anyway, I'm doing my daily walk here in Salt Lake, visiting Susan, and the Lord says, it's his home now. And I said, no, it's not. I live in Texas. I have a job. I have a house. And the Lord said, this is home now. And I said, you may have seen the house, God. It's right there. And he said, this is home now. And I said, Susan doesn't want to live here forever. We have a plan. I get back to the apartment she'd rented. And I said, baby, what do you think about Utah? And she says, I've been wondering how to bring it up to you. I never want to leave.
Wow.
Now, Susan's Southern Baptist. Okay. But she loved it here so much. I said, fine. I will quit my well-paying job and move here with no job. And I'll try to sell the house. And so I go back to Dallas, try to sell the house. The realtor comes in and says, you can't sell. It was built in 1929. It's in horrible condition with foundational issues and stuff. Even if you wanted to sell it, you have to spend thousands of dollars to get it back up to code. So I said, baby, we can't sell the house. I go get rebaptized. The very next week.
Let me ask you this. How did you said you mentioned that your wife is Southern Baptist. How did she feel about this sort of transformation from Catholicism or from, I guess, nothing to then Catholicism and then to rejoining the Church of Jesus Christ of Latter-day Saints?
Her words, I will never join, but I'll support you.
Okay.
I'll go to church with you. I'll go to functions with you, but I will not join.
Interesting.
So I get rebaptized and the very next week a guy knocks on my door and he says, I want to buy your house. And I said, my house isn't for sale. He said, I don't care. And I said, sir, I can't afford to fix it up and sell it to you. And he says, nope, I want to buy it as is. And I said, how much? And it was more than the house was worth. Uh-huh. I called Susan, told her. She said, man, when God wants you someplace, he really wants you someplace.
He is not messing around right now. Do you see this?
Now, the rest of that story is about a year later. I'm sitting in the apartment with Susan here in Salt Lake. And a guy calls me up, says, I want to buy your house in Dallas. Mm-hmm. I said, I sold that house a year ago. He said, are you sure? I said, pretty sure I was there. He said, well, did you get the money? And I said, and spent it. And he said, hang on. And he shuffled some papers and he said, huh, the person who bought your house disappeared. That house is abandoned.
Wow.
To this day, that house is abandoned.
Okay, that is an odd twist I didn't expect coming to this story. With no clue where that person is or what happened or
no nothing. I don't know what happened, but I can tell you that nobody's living in that house. The windows are broken out now. It's a mess.
Uh-huh. And so then, do you retain ownership since they can't find that individual?
No, I sold the title. I the title that belonged to me. Huh. The city owns it now.
Okay.
For back taxes and stuff.
Okay.
So anyway, I get back to Dallas. I mean, I get back to Salt Lake, sell the house, move here. Susan takes me down to Moab. I get a phone call one morning on where we're there, Moab. A girl says, I see you've been on Mormon.org this morning and want information on the church. And I said, that's not true. And she said, well, sir, the only way I get your name and number to pop up on my screen is if you've asked for information on the church. Uh-huh. And I said, be that as it may, it wasn't me.
Yeah.
And she said, well, then how do you expect that I got your name and number? I said, I don't know. But my computer is in Salt Lake and I am in Moab. And she says, you're a member? I said, let me tell you a story. I finished the story and she's in tears. And she said, I'm at the MTC. I'm having a crisis of faith, thinking about going home. They put me to calling people that want information on the church. Thank you for your story. I'm going to go finish my mission now.
Oh my gosh. Wow.
A few weeks later, I get another phone call. Woman says, is this Dusty? I said, yes, it is. And she said, will you please hold for President Nukedorf? Uh-oh. And I said, yes, ma'am.
Yeah. Uh-oh. that would be the thing in my mind. Uh-oh.
But he had heard that I came back to the church after 26 years, and he wanted to talk to me. And he told me that he was going to put he was going to use my story in general conference. And in October 2016 priesthood, he gives a talk on Alma and Amulek, and he uses my story. He calls me David. In 2017, Susan and I go on a date. Well, we went to a gun show, and
so not a date at all. Something you probably yeah,
no.
Listen, I love you, so I'll go to this. But next time we're going to a rom com, and you're
y'all
paying.
Y'all may not date that way in Utah, but that's how we date in Texas.
Okay.
In fact, I tell people, I don't care what map y'all use. I use the 1830 U.S. map because in 1830, Utah was part of Texas.
Yeah. You are Texas through and through. In fact, every stereotype that I know about Texas, you are fulfilling. I'm checking the boxes right now.
I've got a jar of dirt from Texas under my bed here in Salt Lake. So every night I sleep over Texas soil. But anyway, I need a holster. I find a table. I'm talking to the fella there at the holster table, and he says, you're from Texas. And I said, yeah. He goes, why are you here? I said, let me tell you a story. And he says, wait a second. You're the guy that he talked about in general conference? And I said, yep. He says, can I chat with you for a second? I said, sure. So he and my wife and I walk over to a quiet section of Sandy Expo Center, and another fella follows us over. And I get done. The other fella says, you're from Dallas. And I said, yep. And he goes, oh, Cliff. And I said, yep. And he goes, you don't remember me, but 8 years ago you had the swine flu and we gave you a blessing.
Oh my gosh.
And the rest of that story is after his mission, he had gone inactive. Before the 2016 general conference, his bishop says, I've had enough of your inactivity. Here's a ticket. Go to the priesthood session. He goes to the priesthood session. He hears a story about Alma and Amulek, and it reactivates him, not realizing that the story that it reactivated him was about a person he'd given a blessing to 8 years ago.
Wow. That's cool. I just got the chills as I'm sitting here and listening to your story. That's unreal to be able to revisit and be able to speak with him. That's...
And it's just, you know, and Susan, meanwhile, President Nukedorf, when we went to see him, he talked to Susan for about 30 minutes. The next day, Susan says, I'm ready for the discussions. Now, I never pressured her to be a member of the church, mm-hmm. ever.
Because she
the
most said, I ever, I'm
she's
not
ever
going to
do it.
Yeah.
But however, I did say this on occasion. I would say, hey, baby, my patriarchal blessing, since I get sealed in the temple, I'd like it to be with you.
Classy. Good. Good for you. I mean, it's going to be fulfilled one way or another, yeah, sweetheart. Yeah. So.
Sure would be nice if it was you with me there, but, yeah, you know, any port in a storm, baby. But anyway, so I had the unique pleasure of baptizing my own wife.
Wow.
And then last November, she and I were sealed.
I want you to stop there. I want you to talk about that being able to be and witness your wife joining the church and be a part of it. But I want to come back and talk about that in the third block of the Cultural Hall.
Imagine running a small business today. It's challenging. Imaging and internet presence is an absolute must. Even with that, you're still a small star in a bright cyber universe. Now, imagine you have someone who understands how to get your site designed for your talents and then easily searched by potential clients. Imagine Lennon Design. Whether it's strictly a website or a whole package of logo creation, advertising media, and promotional materials, Lennon Design is your partner in business. They'll test the boundaries of their imagination to create something unique for you. When you need creative, affordable design, let it be Lennon Design. Call 801-699-3022 or visit LennonDesign.com.
So I recognize that this is probably a pretty tender and a precious thing, but talk about the experience of watching your wife not only be taught the gospel, but also, you know, those younger or first kind of moments with gaining a testimony and then ultimately being able to be the one to baptize.
You know, anybody who's with President Uchtdorf can feel his love, and she felt that love. Mm-hmm. I credit a lot of the jump starting here to him, but I also am in an incredible ward. I'm in the Rose Park 10th ward here in Rose Park State. And in Salt Lake, and the people in this ward are phenomenal. And Susan not only saw every one of these miracles, and I haven't told you all the miracles, I've only told you a few of them. Mm-hmm. But she saw all of these, and she was a witness to them. She was the beneficiary of them, and she watched it all. So she's sitting here watching these miracles happen. She's seeing the church in action in our ward. People that really care about each other. And when she moved here, people showed up at her door to ask her if she needed anything, you know, and they didn't even, she didn't know them and they didn't know her, but there they were trying to help. Mm-hmm. And she saw all of these, the church really in action. And so it truly wasn't me. Now, I will say this, the missionaries could not have handled her by themselves.
Yeah.
Okay. She asked questions. She wants to know everything. And she would stop. No. And she would ask questions the missionaries, frankly, wouldn't be able to answer. Every one of the missionary lessons, the missionaries were there. And so was my bishop at the time. He's not the bishop now. He was, they just released him and we have a new bishop. Mm-hmm. But back then he was our bishop. He and his wife were at every missionary discussion. And I was there and the missionaries were there. So she had a cast of people that she could ask questions. Mm-hmm. And my bishop, the bishop, he is so knowledgeable that, mm-hmm. you know, it was just amazing. And, to watch her grow and to watch her, we would take road trips and she would ask questions and she would say, but what about this? And I would say, well, actually that's right there in the Bible. Try, you know, First Corinthians. Or, you know, it's an aim. And she would look at, she goes, well, how come I'd ever heard this before in the Baptist church? And I would say, that's why we needed a restoration.
Yeah.
And I could see her growing in this. And until one day we were sitting, talking and she was talking about after the missionaries about maybe doing a baptism. I said, no, what are you really waiting on? You know, at this point, really, what are you waiting on?
Yeah.
You know, it's true. And she said, you're right. And so we set the baptism. It was a lot of people showed up because she's really a wonderful person.
Yeah.
And you know, I have done so many baptisms. I'll tell you though, the hard part for me was doing it in English. I could.
You go back to your Spanish and you're like, wait, what is this in English right now?
Yeah, I literally, it was funny because we baptized so many people in Honduras, and I did that baptism prayer so many times that I can still to this day recite it to you in Spanish. But to do it in English, I had to read it. I mean, I was but it was to look across as you're. She was on the other side of the font. We walked, you know, toward each other. You know how that goes.
And yeah.
I saw her there with her smile, and you know, her she when she smiles, her eyes just sparkle, and I could see her smile. And then we came down in the water, and I got to hold her, and to be the one to baptize her and say those words and to bring her into the church, and then later to bring her into as we got sealed to bring her into. No, through the veil. Mm-hmm. I've been a part of all of that with my wife, and that's just very rare. And because most members don't marry people that aren't members; they marry people that are that right. were already baptized.
Right.
So it was a very rare experience, and to share it with her was phenomenal. But I'll tell you. When I met with President Nukdorf the first time, he asked me, he said, do you have a testimony of the atonement? And I said, that's a trick question. And he said, why is that a trick question? I said, because I believe in it for you. And I believe in it for everybody else.
But
believe in it for me.
Yeah. It's funny. It's funny that you say that, because actually recently with some friends and also online, sort of had a discussion of the atonement, and it really is a thing that in some ways we're like, well, yeah, just, you know, for you, I get it. For everybody else, but when we really try and look at it ourselves, it's a whole different perspective and a whole different feeling when we genuinely apply the atonement to ourselves.
Yeah, well, and he asked me, he says, why? And I kind of lowered my head and I said, because I don't deserve it. For 26 years, I fought the church. I tried to hurt the church. I simply don't deserve the atonement. And he looked at me and he softly said my name. And I looked up and he has that smile on his face that you see in General Conference. Mm-hmm. And he said, Dusty, your sins are forgiven. And oh my gosh, for the first time in my life, I felt the weight lift. And it was an amazing experience for him to say those words to me. And then he said, you're going to be, when he ordained me a high priest, and he gave me a blessing, and he said, you're going to be a mouthpiece. And I thought, he said, people are going to hear your story. And I, for 11 months, nothing happened. Well, then LDS Living Magazine did an online article about my story, and it was seen by over 600,000. It had over 600,000 views.
Give me a time perspective on that. When was that? That's got to be pretty recently.
October of 2016 was when the story came out.
Okay.
And immediately I started getting fireside requests. Then I did this video for this group called High Five Live. Uh-huh. They wanted me to do a video, and I said, no, I don't want to do a video. And they said, do a video. I said, I don't want to do a video. And they kept on, and I finally, he said to me one night, he said, look, you'll get 6 to 10,000 views of this, of, you know, people, and it might help somebody. I said, fine, we'll do the video. So I did this video as of this morning. This was in January of last year. Mm-hmm. So a little over a year ago. As of this morning, that video has had 763,000 views.
Wow.
You know, it's just the story is getting out there. I've done, tomorrow night will be my 70th fireside.
Wow.
In about 75 weeks in 6 different states. And it's just been so fun. And then Cedar Fort called me and they said, we'd like to a book on your story. And I said, that's the silliest idea I've ever heard in my life.
I love your honesty in each of these moments, right? Where you're like, nope, well, that's ridiculous. Well, you're some sort of idiot right there. I'm not sure why you'd, you know, I love that that's the go-to for all of these things.
Well, and they said, well, we think people will benefit from it. And I said, fine, write the book. And they said, well, if you write the book, you know, you'll get all the royalties. If somebody else writes the book, you'll get half the royalties. I said, since nobody's going to buy the book, half of zero is zero. Yeah. Have somebody else write it.
Yeah.
But there have been, I know people have been buying the book because I keep getting requests to go sign them. But it's what President Dorf prophesied is happened just like he said it would.
Yeah.
You know, it's been truly, truly, truly an amazing experience to come back to the church, to the church that I hated and fought against. to now be out there spreading the gospel that it's true and that I was wrong for 26 years. And to have watched my wife transform to, I'm never going to be baptized. I'll support you, but it ain't going to happen. To, I'm ready for the discussions. Hmm. Let's go ahead and get baptized. Let's go ahead and get sealed. To what, and the ward, you know, my former bishop, is my very, very, very dear friend, Jay Eubanks. And he, oh my gosh, the way that they, the ward opened their arms to us. When the Lord reorganized the church and said, this is what I want. He had 10th ward in Rose Park in mind.
Yeah.
That's the kind of people. Susan, I don't think would be a member today if not for that ward. They showed her what living the gospel actually means.
Before we get too far away from it, what's the name of the book?
Oh yeah, Trial of Faith.
Okay.
People, you know, it's on the plays on the whole attorney thing.
Yeah. I got it.
I had to make sure.
Of course. No, I got it. And people can get that obviously anywhere that they get religiously affiliated books or just books in general. I'm sure you can find it online. We'll leave a link.
You can buy Amazon, yeah.
Yeah, we'll leave a link for it in association with this episode at theculturalhall.com if people want to check it out. So when you go and speak, then does your wife, she obviously accompanies you, I'm sure, but does she also?
On almost all of them.
But does she also speak as well?
I don't let her talk. No, I'm kidding. I'm kidding. Yeah. No, she doesn't. She is very comfortable being there to support me, and she'll talk to people after if they have questions. Uh-huh. Invariably, she'll have a group of people around her asking questions, and I always do as well. But she is not comfortable speaking to people in, you know, in public speaking. So she does not want to. So mm-hmm. if she wanted to, it'd be great. But
yeah.
She every now and again, and if I on some firesides, depending on the on the, how I feel, how the spirit leads me, I will have question answer, and occasionally they'll ask her a question during the question answer, and she'll start it off, and then she'll say, "You can finish the answer. You know more than I do," and I'll finish the answer. But you know, when I talk to groups, I talk about these miracles, and then I say I say all this to just tell you this: the Lord loves you,
yeah.
And he's aware of every. There's no coincidence. He's aware of everything, and I talk about the fact that one of the ways you know that he loves us is he gives us a prophet. Mm-hmm. You know, there's 40,000 denominations in this country all using the same book and teaching something different, and it's because they don't know. They don't have that leadership of a prophet. We have to have a prophet. That's why the Lord wanted there to be a prophet.
Yeah.
And I talk about the fact that people can obviously find negative stuff about the church.
Sure.
Just, you know, you can Google it. But why? What does it matter? I don't care what the issue is. What does it matter? How does it affect you today? The biggest question I get in, because I've had thousands of emails and messages from people in the last, you know, 15 months. And the biggest question I get is my feelings on polygamy.
Okay.
And I tell them, I don't care about polygamy.
Right.
Well, actually, I tell them I love it. I got 14 wives.
Okay.
But it doesn't affect, but I say, look, pick any issue with the church. Polygamy we'll use for an example. There's only two options, only two. It's from God or it's not from God.
Mm-hmm.
Now, if it's from God, it's above my pay grade. But if it's not from God, and I'm not saying that it's not, but for the sake of argument, let's say it's not from God, then it would be by definition a mistake. And then the question you have to ask yourself is, if Joseph made a mistake, is he still a prophet? And the answer is absolutely yes. Mm-hmm. That if you, and I tell about a guy walked up, he said, I want to find the perfect church. Can you help me? And I said, absolutely. He said, how do I find the perfect church? And I said, die.
Yeah.
Because you're never going to find it on this earth.
Right. Right.
What you're going to find on this earth is that churches, the church is run by imperfect people. So there's going to be mistakes, but You need to look for the church that has the authority, the keys, the priesthood. And we have that church here. It's us. And anything else doesn't really matter. Did he have the first vision? Yes. Did he translate the Book of Mormon? Yes. Does anything else truly matter? Yeah. Because if you're looking for the perfect church, you're not going to find it. Abraham lied. Moses killed. Mm-hmm. Peter denied. You know, let's go down the list of prophets and show me one who is perfect.
Right. Right.
So you're not going to find perfection, but you will find the truth, and you will find the church that has the authority and the keys, and we're it. And embrace that. Don't let the things that you don't know overcome the things that you do know. I had a couple walk up to me after a fireside, and she said, this is my husband. We just got married. He's thinking about leaving the church. Can you help us? And I said, no, I can't. However, I will ask you a question. And I turned to him and I said, look, you just got married, just moved in? He said, yep. I said, okay, so you just moved in together. You found out, because he was leaving because he discovered things he didn't know before about the church.
Sure.
Things that
were always there, but he just was unaware of them.
He didn't know about it. Yeah. And so I said, so you move in with her and you find out that she squeezes the toothpaste in the middle. She didn't put the cap back on. She puts the toilet paper in backwards. She snores when she sleeps. She doesn't cook as well as you'd like, and she doesn't keep house well as you'd like. These are things you did not know before the marriage. So now what are you going to do, divorce her? Or are you going to stay together because the love overcomes what you didn't know? And he said, I'm going to stay with her because the love overcomes what I didn't know. I said, you just described the church. Hmm.
Do you know the end of that story with them?
He turned to her and said, let's go home and pray. I don't know anything after that.
Huh.
But that's, if you look at it like that, that you don't give up something because you learn new. Don't let what you don't know overcome the things that you do know.
Yeah.
And embrace the truth of it. Yes, acknowledge Joseph made some mistakes. Brigham made some mistakes.
Yeah.
John Taylor made some mistakes. But so what? I've seen the job description for prophet, and it doesn't include perfect.
Yeah, yeah. But I think that sometimes we just, you know, we figure, well, if God's leading it, then he would do it perfectly. And that's just a false cause and effect.
But God talking to a prophet doesn't mean the prophet hears it.
Right.
Doesn't mean that the prophet understands it. Do I think that John, in his vision of the future, in the revelation of John, did he see dragons? No, I think he saw airplanes, but had no word for that back then. You know, so I think that, and I don't know that for a fact, that's just me, but I think that prophets do the best they can. Mm-hmm. And they hear, and they make their, and do I think that they're getting revelation from God? Absolutely. Do I think they always get everything right? No, nobody does. And if you're looking for that perfect, perfect church, again, die.
Yeah.
It's there.
Dusty, if people wanted to get in touch with you, either to ask you a question or to have you come and do a fireside, what's the best way that people can get in touch with you?
They can email me.
Okay. What's your email address?
Celtic Mormon, that's CELTIC Mormon at Outlook.com.
And
I've got a public figure Facebook page that has links to the book, links to my, those videos. I did a YouTube video with a interview with some people. They were back then called Three Mormons. I forget what they're called now. They changed their name when the church changed how they want us to be referred. It also has links to the President Neudorf's talk. It's my public figure Facebook page.
That's just under Dusty Smith.
Yes, but be careful because there's an atheist Dusty Smith.
Okay.
And I have a public figure and a personal Facebook page. You want to make sure you get the right one, but it doesn't matter. If you get on mine and message me, I'll tell you where the right one is.
Okay. Dusty Smith. Now, we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall three questions. So I'm going to ask those of you right now. The first question is do you have a calling? And if so, what is it?
I have a calling as a ward mission leader. I can tell you that I fail at it miserably.
Okay. But you're honest about it. And that's the thing that's important.
Well, every 6 weeks, I still, like I say, I practice law in Texas. Uh-huh. Every 6 weeks I go to Texas for a week and I do firesides, you know, every week, sometimes more than one a week. It's just, I have so much, I just, you know, my time is really limited.
If you could,
but I was gospel doctrine teacher for 3 years and loved it.
Okay. If you could pick a calling for yourself, either one that exists or make one up, what would you pick?
Back row monitor.
Back row monitor.
Yeah. I like sitting in the back row at church. I enjoy teaching. And so the perfect calling for me was gospel doctrine teacher. I loved it. I absolutely loved gospel doctrine teaching.
The final question that we ask everyone who steps into the cultural hall, and you can interpret this question in whatever way you would like, but the question is what is your favorite part of your faith?
The favorite part of my faith. That's kind of a broad question, isn't it?
Yeah.
The favorite part of my faith is all encompassing. It's the atonement. It's having a prophet. It's knowing that the Lord loves me that much, that he designed the atonement. He loves me as much as if I was the only person on this earth. Mm. And there's nothing that you can do to get out of the reach of his arms, of Heavenly Father's arms. And I tell people in firesides that don't ever forget that, yes, we're asked to believe in him, but trust me when I tell you this, he believes in us.
Yeah.
And he absolutely believes in every one of us. And that's what I like about our faith, is that we encompass that. We encompass the truth and the priesthood and the keys. And we have a prophet that listens and guides. And we have the Lord that his atonement works for everybody, even me. And that's the best part of the faith. And it's the faith that allows me to live eternally with my wife.
Dusty Smith, thank you so much for taking a few minutes. We hope that this episode has nourished and strengthened your body, that if you're not healthy enough to listen to it this week, that you'll be healthy enough to listen to it next week, and that when the time comes, you'll be able to travel home in safety. In the meantime, we'll be saving a seat for you on the back row of the Cultural Hall.
Save me a seat. It's sure to be neat on the back.